You'll recall at the beginning of the program, those of you who had joined us then, I mentioned about Naps News and a couple of articles that we were posting. One of the stories that was posted there on the Coast site is about reading, about how we read and don't read things, and in what form we read things, and that we don't really pay all that much attention. And then I mentioned another story about marijuana having alien DNA in it. I'll just put it this way, for those of you who haven't checked it out yet, those two stories are related. And I won't spoil how, but you'll figure it out once you get there. We're talking with Dr. Rudy Schild and Ray Hernandez about FREE and this massive new study that they put out, Volume 1, Beyond UFOs, looking at the science of consciousness and how it relates to contact with non-human intelligence. And some of these findings are absolutely astounding. The positive responses that they got from thousands of people all over the planet who were at least initially frightened and then developed sort of an understanding about these ongoing contacts they had with some unknown intelligence. So who are these visitors? Are they aliens? Are they ETs? Are they ultra-terrestrials? Are they time travelers? We'll get into that in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. Rudy Schild, in the book you write about the possibility of more advanced civilizations, the likelihood that there are more civilizations out there older than us, far more advanced, maybe type 2, type 3 civilizations. They essentially would be gods to us because of their advanced technology and psychic abilities and who knows what else. I'm wondering, when you hear stories like Calvin Parker's that we're going to talk about tonight, and the very negative spin that happens with at least some of the contactees, abductees, stories about being taken against their will, implants, medical procedures, very definitely a negative spin for them. Is it possible that there is more than one agenda at play here, that there is more than one advanced civilization that is interacting with us and that they have different ground rules?
I think it's almost inevitable that what you suggest is true, namely that because there are so many agendas and likewise there are so many spacecraft types recorded or reported, meaning that why would we expect that all people would have developed or all advanced civilizations would have developed the identical spacecraft plan, the identical UFO appearance? And so we have it that there's no agreed upon form or structure or appearance of the UFO. It can take on so many types. And another thing that's key to this comes from our astronomical knowledge. As you know, I've had a career of 45 years studying things like planets and very subtle topics like gravitational lensing, using the entire universe as a lens. And we've been forced to conclude that the number of planets out there is probably greater than the number of stars. And that must mean that there would be older civilizations than ours and younger ones. And of course, many of these would exceed us in intelligence and skill. And it's, I think, only old thinking that has us believing that we are the only civilization that exists in this universe. And so why shouldn't there be many different people here for many different agendas and purposes?
You know, what I wonder about is whether or not a civilization as advanced as the ones we're talking about even need UFOs. Are UFOs sort of like a distraction or a display or a performance, as has been suggested by some colleagues of mine, the idea that they give us something that engages us as opposed to being an actual vehicle that they use to get here?
Yes, and don't you see that what you suggest to them now and in your comments of a few moments ago is exactly what the FREE study is finding, namely that there seem to be several classes of people visiting us. Some are described as humanoid-looking, some as insect or mantid-like, some looking more like alligator heads, serpentine, and some of them looking like the classic alien grays with the big heads. So almost certainly different people are visiting us, and almost certainly these are at different stages of their evolution. reason, and probably some of them don't need to be present inside of a spacecraft to communicate with us. And we're finding that only a fraction of the encounters with these intelligences involve a spacecraft or a UFO.
Ray, I want to ask you about some of the specific findings, because, you know, there's political dynamite in this stuff. I mean, you have a people who say these things decreased dramatically. Their concern with material things of life, their interest in organized religion, their fear of death goes way down. Their desire to become a well-known, famous person goes way down. Their interest in achieving material success goes way, way down. However, what goes up is their desire to help other people, their compassion for other people, their sensitivity to the suffering of others, and in particular, their concern about the welfare of the planet goes way, way up. That is going to be disturbing for a lot of people who I think are just intrinsically conditioned to oppose caring about the planet.
Well, to respond to that statement, we duplicated the research findings of Dr. Kenneth Ring, who's probably the leading academic on near-death experiences, as you might know. Also, almost all of the researchers in our group knew that these findings were taking place. What they didn't have was the actual statistics, the actual percentages to be able to quantify this. And remember, this came from more than 4,000 individuals from 100 countries, and the findings are undeniable. That they are slowly working with selected individuals and slowly transforming them in terms of their personality profile. The only people that haven't been able to do that was the individuals that only had one, two, or three experiences. So they're still stuck with that negativity of being taken against their will or being paralyzed in a table being experimented on or like a medical procedure. So those people were never able to evolve at all. So those are the ones that still remained negative in our surveys. And as I said earlier, we had almost 400 individuals that had abduction-related type of experiences. But the interesting finding now is that out of those 440 individuals that had an abduction, 70% of them now call themselves contactees and not abductees, because they had additional experiences which were much more different than the early traumatic experiences.
So they become convinced that it's for their own good. It's like, take your medicine.
Well, no, not only that. That's part of it, but the actual experiences changed. Initially, many of these individuals had experiences with small grades. Later on, the type of being that they interacted with were energy beings and human-looking type of beings. A good majority of them, actually almost double the number of the individuals that have had abduction-related experiences, were actually brought to other realities, like in Jodie Foster, the movie Contact. We've had almost double the amount of people that have had these matrix type of experiences than abduction experiences. So what you had is the actual type of experience actually changed over time. And that's what was never documented in any other type of research, because there was never done, this research was never done, but we've documented that the experience actually changed over time.
Rudy, you have now data on the frequency of which types of aliens, other beings, we're calling them aliens in air quotes, are seen and reported, and what are the most common. And, you know, some are the typical grays. A lot of them look like humans. Some look like insects. Some look like animals. What you end up with is, do we know what they really look like? If they can take on different kinds of shapes, if they can allow us to see different kinds of vehicles, whether they're real or not, if they can create images in our heads with psychic abilities as opposed to creating technology, do we really know what they look like? Do we really know where they're from?
All good questions, George. And I also share this concern or have these questions. One thing that's suspicious is that the kinds of extraterrestrials that are reported seems to evolve with age. And that means that children tend to see, as I said minutes ago, things like Disney World cartoon characters. And those would be less frightening and more cheery and more expected by young minds. And so what we know, what we reasonably infer from this is the fact that they are able to shapeshift or to change their appearance to some extent. And it's likely that we can never really know for sure what they look like. But because we do seem to break down the great majority, like 99% of them, into five or six classes, it seems likely that those are the actual appearances, but that's not so far documented because we don't have yet a way of seeing what they really look like apart from what they're doing to our minds.
You hint, you suspect that they are here as part of an experiment or a helping us to evolve. It's part of our evolution. They want to help us get to the next step or survive the place that we're in right now. Is that right?
Yes, and if I may say something, George, I worked with one of the experiences. Her name is Susie Hansen, and I believe you have interviewed her in the last 6 months. And she said that the extraterrestrials themselves have told her what is happening and how their program is evolving. They said that for the longest time, the Earth was considered basically off limits, and the aliens.
Hello.
I'm here, George.
Okay.
I think Rudy was cut off.
I think we lost Rudy, but Ray, if you'd like to pick up on that, I think you know where he was heading with it, the idea of an alien agenda.
One of our, we asked approximately 60 questions related to what did this non-human intelligence tell you, and we had more than 3,000 individuals respond to these series of questions. So we gave all those responses to Kathy Martin, which I'm assuming you know very well. And so Kathy wrote a chapter in our book on what were the messages that these beings told you. And they addressed all the issues that we discussed earlier, the issues of the welfare of our planet, that if we don't take care of a planet, we're going to be destroying it, that we need to become more spiritually evolved. We need to become less egotistical, less warfaring, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what we hypothesize is that they're slowly transitioning us to become more altruistic, more spiritual. And many of the questions that we asked related to the issue of the spirit world, of after death. And almost 95% of these people stated that they believe that these entities are somehow related to the spirit world, either the pre-birth or after death. And related to that topic is that almost every member of our free board of directors believe that at least some of these entities might be multidimensional, because just like Jacques Vallée, there is a manipulation of space-time in all of our data. The way we perceive this non-human intelligence is very, very similar to what Jacques Vallée has stated in numerous of his writings. We've actually supported, through our data, a lot of his prognostications.
Yes. I the first time I met him and first time I interviewed him in 1989, he shared with me the same kinds of quotes that you have in the book about, look, if they can manipulate space-time, they can be from anywhere. They could be extraterrestrials. They could also be interdimensionals, time travelers, all of the above. And it makes me wonder if they just live here, if they're not from out there, that they live here. And it's always been their home.
There's a theory of this professor from Columbia University. He's the director of astrophysics at Columbia University, Dr. Caleb Schwartz. And he recently wrote a paper hypothesizing that non-human intelligence might actually be embedded in the very fabric of our universe. And that's very similar to the quantum hologram theory of consciousness, that our universe is an information storage device. And you can ask Rudy when he comes back on again, that Rudy was one of the first people to publicly state that black holes actually store information like a computer hard drive.
I think Rudy's here with us. Let's let him tackle that. Rudy, I'll ask it. Let me phrase the question this way. You mentioned about the mystery of entanglement, how even Einstein wanted to set it aside and not deal with it because it was so disturbing. The idea that his quantum mechanics, quantum physics must be wrong because this can't possibly be true, kind of a thing. You maybe have found a way to sort of explain that, right?
Well, if I might, what we notice is that in studying atomic collisions, particles which have interacted by colliding with each other carry information about their spin states and the residual properties following the collision to great distances. And if the position and the nature of one of the collided particles is measured precisely, then it seems as though the properties of the other instantaneously in the universe become defined. And what that seems to suggest is that the propagation of information in the quantum or in the shadow space, which I sometimes call this, in the spirit world, is instantaneous across vast distances, and that the universal hologram theory explains that if you have a two-dimensional picture of our three-dimensional structure, then it has to respond instantaneously and hold that structure, and that's the picture that we're dealing with now.
Again, just we got to go to a break in about a minute. I mean, the idea that they live here, and that's entirely possible.
I've mentioned Susan Hansen before. She says that they view their activities as being like explorers on a remote outpost. They are here to help us, they say, and they might spend a lifetime or a large fraction of a lifetime in the Earth environment.
Well, I hope they enjoy their stay. We're talking with Rudy Schild and Ray Hernandez about Beyond UFOs, the Science of Consciousness and Contact with Non-Human Intelligence, this massive study, huge amount of data, great contributions from other researchers and academics. And in a moment, when we come back, we open up the phone lines and you can jump into this conversation as well. We're talking with Rudy Schild and Ray Hernandez about FREE in this massive study that they've done. When we come back, we will open up the phone lines and get a couple of your calls in. But I want to ask about some demographics, about the respondents, the 4,200 people who responded to this survey, where they're from, and whether there are cultural differences that may have affected the outcome. We'll be right back. Rudy, I want to ask you about the respondents. It seems like, you know, the big chunk of them, I don't have the page in front of me, but I remember reading the chart, and the biggest chunk is the United States, and you've got a lot of respondents from Canada, UK, Ireland, Australia, and then there's which are expected because, you know, of the outreach. You did radio programs, and those are the people who heard those programs in English. There was also a huge response, it's almost an outlier, from Mexico. What do you make of that?
I think that we did our homework correctly, and we did conduct a survey in, as I recall, five languages, which did include translation into Mandarin, so that we could get the broadest reach possible. And because the contributions were voluntary, we have little more control than to just provide opportunities in the many languages. I think in addition to the languages you already cited. There was French, and I even think there was Portuguese, although Ray could have the last word about that.
Ray, let me ask you, as sort of part of that question, is there a reason that the United States would be singled out for more attention from these beings wherever they're from, or is it more a function of just the outreach that was done?
It might have been the outreach, because the radio, the hundreds of radio shows that we appeared, most of them were U.S.-based radio shows. The Facebook, obviously, is international, anyone that reads English. But this study is based only upon the English language surveys, not the other languages. And what we found out was that when we grouped them into these geographic regions, we looked at the percentage variance among the different questions, and what we found out was that there was very little variance by geographic regions. So that means people were answering very similar to each other, no matter what geography they were at. There was a difference in the Spanish language surveys. In the Spanish languages, language, it was actually much more positive. And there were many more contact with human-looking beings and with energy beings, and much smaller numbers with the small grays. But the major differences between the Spanish and English was the positivity. It was even more positive in the Spanish languages.
Do you have a sense of the frequency of contacts in Mexico versus other parts of the world? I mean, is that, I guess you have to do some guesswork just based on.
What we found out in the Spanish languages is that, again, the vast majority of these individuals had numerous contact experiences, just like the U.S. Very, very similar patterns. The paranormal aspects of it were clearly brought out, just like in the U.S., and the transformational aspects of it. So it's very, very similar. The only difference was it was much more positive, and maybe because they had more interactions with human-looking beings and with energy beings, and not so much some of these more scarier type of beings like the small grays.
Rudy, I don't know how much demographic info you get from each of the respondents, but is there... You know, when you look at UFO sightings, for example, it cuts across all demographic categories, age and locations and income levels and education levels, things of that sort. Is that true for what you'd call paranormal experiences as well?
In the first place, I don't consider myself an expert in the UFOlogy per se, and so I haven't actually explored whether there are systematic differences that you propose. I do believe that the message that is perceived by the people having these close encounters of the fifth kind tend to be very loving and caring, and I think that most probably were receiving these messages even to a greater extent, the positive extent, in the United States, because I believe that's where our psyche is these days. In other words, I think that the Americans as a people are generally satisfied with their lives and willing to explore otherworldliness, and there's a high curiosity factor, a high self-confidence factor, and all of these things would have to be inputs to a more guided, more inspired answer to your question.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. We're going to go to Lori in Avon, Connecticut. Lori, what's on your mind?
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm trying to tie something in that some years ago there was a show, and it involved autism, and I fell in the archives, but autism is no mistake. And going to this show and hearing the commentary about how gene expression is being modified potentially by the aliens, and I'm just curious what your take is on that.
That's a good question. We didn't get into, Ray, maybe you could tackle this. We didn't really get into it, but in the book you have some data on healings and positive physical and medical type of results, right?
Yes, we have a whole chapter on medical healings, and that was because approximately 50% of the individuals that took our survey stated that either they or a member of their family had a medical healing as a result of interaction with non-human intelligence. And regarding the issue of autism, we just finished interviewing Dr. Diana Hennessy Powell, who is a medical doctor. Actually, she was a colleague of Dr. John Mack at Harvard. And she's been researching ESP and precognition skills of severely autistic children. And it seems like many of these severely autistic children are able to read people's minds and are able to extract information, like Rudy had mentioned earlier, from the information field. and she's been documenting that. And so Dean Radin, again, has been doing all these numerous studies on precognition and ESP. And individuals that that are having these close encounter experiences, just like near-death experiences, for a certain duration after these experiences, their ESP and precognition skills are extremely heightened. And I'm sure you've heard of that, George, but we've been able to document that.
Thank you, caller. Let's try our first-time caller, Larry, in Pennsylvania. Hi, Larry. You're on with Rudy and Ray.
Yes, interesting show. One of your guests mentioned that he believed there were more planets than stars, which makes sense if you believe each star has its own solar system. There could be trillions of planets. And if you imagine the universe as a beach, maybe 3 miles long, and each grain of sand is a planet, why us? Why out of all those grains of sand, billions and trillions, why have these aliens, maybe different groups of aliens, have picked us to come here and survey us and contact us?
Good question. Rudy?
Yes. Okay. This, I think, is a question for me. The question is, why us? And what we know as astronomers that it's probably true that all stars are surrounded by a complete solar system. By complete, I mean probably at one point it had more planets than it did today, and it evolved by swallowing or observing planets, so that what the astronomers would call the phase space for planet existence, or what you might simply call the ability of a star to hold a large family of planets, that space is apparently full, and what's happening is planets are still now very slowly evaporating. Now, again, as astronomers, we know that there is a golden zone around each star where the temperature of the planets would be similar to the Earth, similar being useful because we know that on the Earth, temperatures favor the existence of water as ice, as liquid water, and as water vapor. And in these combinations, we have beautiful preconditions for life to emerge.
I guess ultimately the answer could be that if there are advanced civilizations and that there are other places where life exists, that there could be other Earths that are also being visited and helped along the way, too. We just don't have that information.
No, we can't know that with the kind of survey that we have done so far.
Right.
And I believe that what you say is correct, namely that there could be other stars that have Earths that have similar conditions to us, and we are, as astronomers, now surveying these very carefully to look at the details of the chemistries of their atmospheres to see if any life tracers exist in their atmospheres.
We're going to go to the wild card line. Joe in Monterey, California. Hey, Joe.
Thank you for taking my call, George. It's a good show.
Thanks.
Gentlemen, I have I've had a large variety of different experiences and many of them. I wanted to know if you have done any research on past lives and the development of soul itself, not the physical person, but the spiritual aspect of the individual, the soul of the different person, by way of in-between lives. Now, I do past life travel. So my clients vary from different types of people, and some of them are from other planets incarnated on Earth. Do you find a relationship between the advancement of soul itself and the quality and number of experiences that people have?
Ray, you want to tackle that one?
Yes, we asked approximately 40 questions related to this topic that this gentleman is raising. And why did we raise so many of those questions? Because so many of the researchers in our group have gotten these types of messages from non-human intelligence and from the people that they work with. And what we found was that approximately 30% of these individuals were told by non-human intelligence of their past lives, of reincarnation, of their missions. We also, many of these individuals were physically brought, this is independent of a near-death experience, they were physically brought to the spirit world, like in a matrix reality, like I had mentioned earlier. The bottom line was that approximately 95% of these individuals believe that the non-human intelligence that was interacting with them are somehow related to the spirit world, the afterlife, another multidimensional reality that that we came from and where we go after we die.
And Rudy, I guess it goes back to the first question I asked you about consciousness and what is it? Is the soul, is that what consciousness is? I'll just do a side story here. Every time I've had surgery and have to go under anesthesia, I've asked my anesthesiologist ahead of time, where do I go? Where does me go when I'm under? And they look at me like I'm crazy. So I don't know if you know the answer to soul and consciousness. Are they the same?
This is a big stumbling block for the academic research community today. It appears to me that you cannot understand the nature of consciousness without understanding that there is something eternal in our being, in our very core makeup. And I believe that that's a brain function, that the brain is able to resonate with that karmic body or soul connection, and that our very act of consciousness is comparing information that our sensors pick up with our soul connection to see if what we're observing visually or orally or optically or through feeling and touching sensors in the body, if that can be compared to things in our past history so that we can relate to them and understand what we did about them successfully or unsuccessfully last time that they were perceived, so that we can make intelligent choices. This assists the preservation of our species, which is the purpose of the universe.
There are other callers on. I don't think we're going to have enough time to get to them. Ray, I'll ask you, what is the next step for this research? This says Volume 1, this Beyond UFOs, so it sounds like Volume 2 is coming. And what would be in it, and then where does Free go from there?
Well, Volume 2 is going to be a book relating to the theoretical aspects of consciousness in contact with non-human intelligence. What we've had is, I don't know if you recall the movie, What the Bleep. That was a movie about consciousness, and it dealt with quantum physics and consciousness. What we want to be able to do is to put into What the Bleep the aspects of non-human intelligence. So Volume 2 will be focusing on the relationship between consciousness and non-human intelligence. In terms of our research study, we pretty much have terminated our English language research study. We're still continuing with the Spanish language research study. We're also working on a documentary, a science and physics documentary exploring these topics. And it's we've already interviewed approximately 8 PhD scientists mainly physicists and neuroscientists. And we're going to be going up to Boston to interview academics at Harvard and at MIT.
So Rudy, let me ask you, we got like 30 seconds left. Rudy, is it possible? Is this knowable? Ultimately, can we get our heads around it, or are we just going through the motions?
I think things are being revealed to us, and I think that we will increasingly get answers if we know how to understand them and understand the biases that come with the answers. I'm talking about channeled information here, which is part of the syndromes, and many people in the free survey did report getting channeled information about this, and I think that we are in the process of putting together a grander picture of how this is proceeding.
Well, we'll have you back and have to hear more about it. Ray Hernandez, Rudy Schild, thanks very much. Interesting stuff beyond UFOs. I highly recommend it. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, the animals will take us into the break. And when we come back, Calvin Parker with an amazing story, 45 years in the making.